The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it.
Alex, thanks for joining us and getting dressed up once again for our in-depth conversation.
Clothes are very important.
I thought I'd wear a special t-shirt for you today that I thought you'd like.
Thank you.
You're sketching out a little bit the internet. Have you got have you got hotspot you can use by any chance? And we'll start again.
Oh, that did not come through at all.
Yeah, I am. Is it your side or my side? Your side.
Hello. Man, I think it might be my side, but Let me kill. Okay.
One, two, three. Yeah, I can hear you just, but no screen.
Can you hear me now, mate?
Yeah, a bit scattered though.
Fucking hell. Maybe. Do you want me to jump out and jump back in?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, sec. We might have to do minus video on my side then, if this is going to be the fucking case.
Okay.
Hold on. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Cool. Alex, how you doing, mate? Thanks for joining us for round 7.
Thanks, Pete. How many rounds are we going to do? We're going to make it to 12? What do you think?
I think so. Mate, people are really loving the content that you're sharing. More and more people each week on the Telegram page are actually understanding the bigger picture here, which is great. It's taking a while. You know, there's still a lot of resentment. There's a lot of maybe resentment isn't the right word, but I think for some people it is. And I discussed this with Brandon Quiddam the other day. Thanks for that introduction. We had a really good chat 2 days ago, and we discussed why there's so much emotion attached to when I do share and other people do share information about Bitcoin. And we went into sort of self-worth, self-loathing, fear of missing out, fear of the boat already has sailed, blah, 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 and the list goes on. And we went into the sort of the depths of what currency and money means for a lot of people. And I wanted to take this opportunity today not only to say thank you for taking us on this journey, but also to take us down the track of how this works in the real world. Because I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. And I'll give you an example, one example which will lead you into something. Somebody said, you know, Bitcoin's a scam, it's this. And then somebody wrote back and said, well, I ended up buying a house because I invested in it early and I took some money out. So I cashed in my chips the other day and I ended up buying a house. So how can it be an evil thing when it bought that person so much joy? But I think what a lot of people might have a hard time wrapping their head around is the future of how to use Bitcoin. And I know, for instance, when we were setting up our health retreat, I asked you, is there a way we can accept Bitcoin? And you were like, well, there is, but people have to have it to be able to put it into your account to start with, something like that. So let's talk about where we're at in the big scheme of things and the future of how this payment system is going to work so that it isn't scary for people.
Yeah, for sure. I like what you mentioned there about what you and Brandon spoke about, because, you know, the truth of the matter is people have a really unhealthy relationship with money. You know, people are taught from a young age, you know, money is the root of all evil and all this sort of shit, and, you know, to hate rich people. And it's like, it's a really, really, really poor relationship to money. And then, you know, Bitcoin comes along and, you know, redefines, you know, the notion of money and turns it into something that's issued by rulers into something that is functions on a set of rules that is the same for everyone, you know? So it actually fixes the money. So I would argue, you know, that there's actually a bit of truth to this idea of money is the root of all evil. And it's not that money is, it's that fake government issued money is the root of all evil. Whereas, you know, if you fix the money, and this is sort of why that Bitcoin meme exists, it's like fix the money, fix the world, is like, if we get that right, then, you know, people can actually have a healthy relationship with money. They can actually save the product of their labor, and, you know, they can sort of come to the realization that, you know, money really is the most important thing they have, in the sense of it represents, you know, their input on the planet. It represents, you know, the product of their passion and of the things that they've worked for. It's like their fucking time and energy. So that's like, I'm glad you and Brandon talked about that. So to come to your question, I guess the usage of Bitcoin. So one thing, and I spoke about this, actually, I'll give you a link to this talk so you can share it around with people, but I spoke about it a number of years ago, where I spoke about Bitcoin takes the idea of money as an object or as a unit of account, like as this thing that you can use to store value, to exchange value, and to measure other goods and services, which is usually, like, you know, when people think of money, they think of a banknote or a gold coin or, you know, whatever, right? So it's like the item, the object or the unit. But it also, Bitcoin embeds, you know, the money on a global payments network that doesn't require any intermediaries and that anybody can use when they want to at any point in time. Now, what's unique about that is, in the old world, in the legacy financial system, we've got the money, right, which is issued by governments. So you know, they can sort of, that's their arm of control. But then there's also a set of institutions that the government gives basically monopoly licenses to act as the payments infrastructure. So they're two separate things. Whereas in Bitcoin, it's all on one thing. Like it's the payment network itself, and the money itself is embedded in one sort of system where you don't need permission to be a part of the financial system. You do not need permission from some sort of bureaucrats to go and provide a product or service that's financial in nature. You don't need all this wastage in the middle, whether it's, you know, your Visas or your Masters or your PayPals or all that mess in the middle that tries to enable money to move around the world. It's not required, because with Bitcoin, it's inherently inbuilt in the technology itself. And that's really powerful. Now, where people get, I think, confused is that because money as a thing is something that, you know, emerges over time, particularly something that is selected by the market, you know, and I think we've spoken about this a couple of times in prior podcasts, is, you know, gold, for example, it wasn't just selected by some person. It emerged as the money human beings all around the world wanted to use, because it has all these cool, unique attributes. You know, it's scarce, it's fungible, it's, you know, recognizable, divisible, portable, etc. Right now, Bitcoin is emerging for very similar reasons, but because it's just way better than fucking gold across every attribute of money, you know, people are self-selecting. It's no one's coming along and saying, you must use Bitcoin. Like, and actually, this is a really interesting point, is, you know, Bitcoin is so powerful that without being forced to use it, the world is choosing to use it first as the place they store value, and over time as the medium for exchange. And that's really powerful. Like, you know, in order for the Australian dollar, the US dollar to subsist, we're basically at gunpoint. Like, if you don't use the Australian dollar in Australia, you go to fucking jail. Like, if you go and print your own bit of money in the you know, in your home office and go try and use that, or print, you know, Pete's money or Alex's money, you go to jail. So it's like at gunpoint we're forced to use inferior money, whereas Bitcoin, without coercion, without force, just through sheer merit of being a better money, it is selected by the marketplace. Now, as this process starts and emerges, you know, Bitcoin is going to appreciate. I don't call it appreciate in value, but appreciate in purchasing power. And what that means is, you know, when you price Bitcoin against other goods or services or different monies, Bitcoin is appreciating the amount of other goods or services or products or, you know, money it can buy. So I try and help people kind of flip the script here. Is what you want to think about Bitcoin is not the price of Bitcoin, but how much Bitcoin is required for you to buy other things. And this is sort of like, you know, if you bear with me, sort of you'll start to get what I mean here, is that when Bitcoin first emerged, you could barely buy 1 cent with it. You know, it was like for one Bitcoin, it was 0.008 cents. You know, so you needed almost, you needed a couple thousand Bitcoin just to buy $1. Now, one Bitcoin buys you $80,000, right? Now, you could think about that as, like, for example, eggs, right? So, you know, when in the early days when Bitcoin was first emerging, you know, one Bitcoin might have bought you one egg, you know, or less, realistically speaking. You know, maybe in 2010, you know, when Bitcoin started to sort of emerge, you know, one Bitcoin was worth $3. So, you know, you might have been able to buy half a dozen eggs, right? Now, one Bitcoin can buy you all the fucking eggs you'll ever want. So what's happening is Bitcoin is appreciating in relative purchasing power against everything on the planet. It's appreciating against food. It's appreciating against land. It's appreciating against every other fiat money that exists. It's appreciating against everything. And during that phase, you know, as a, you know, intelligent individual, what are you most likely going to do with that Bitcoin? Are you going to swap it for other goods and services? Or are you going to want to hold on to it because it's appreciating relative to every other good, service, product, asset in the world? Well, you're most likely going to hold on to it because, you know, there's a really great site. I think I sent you the one the other day, which is How Wrong People Been. That same guy made another one, which is how much did this cost me in Bitcoin terms today? And what he does is when a new, like, his website goes back in time, it's like, pick a product, and it could be like, you know, the day the Tesla came out, for example, you know, the Tesla. So it's like, if you bought the Tesla on this day, or if you bought the same amount of Bitcoin, would it be worth? And, you know, when you start thinking of it that way, like, I remember in the early days, you know, I might have bought something with some Bitcoin. You know, I think I sold some Bitcoin in the early days for, you know, I think it was $2,000 or $3,000 to buy some stuff. You know, I bought some sound system and shit for my house. And if I value that amount of Bitcoin that I sold back then for that shit, like I paid almost the price of the house now for my stupid stereo system. Mm. The most expensive stereo system I've ever bought. So that just sort of creates a natural tendency to want to hold on to it because, you know, it is appreciating. Now, that does not preclude anybody from spending it. Like Bitcoin, inbuilt in it is the capacity to send money to anyone, anywhere, anytime without permission. And without restriction and without censorship. So you can do that. But I don't believe it's going to be the primary use case for Bitcoin until it matures further. And that's the only thing we're doing here is like as more and more people hold Bitcoin, there needs to be like a minimum level of saturation or a minimum level of liquidity for people to start, you know, using it as a form of payment. Now, if you're someone who is purely like, I've got a few friends who live purely on Bitcoin, they're completely out of the system. They get paid in Bitcoin. They pay other people in Bitcoin. They're completely out of the system. Now for them, they don't have anything else to spend, in which case that's fine. You know, anyone can do that. Like, you know, you can completely opt yourself out of fiat and use that. Now, me, on the other hand, I, you know, have a business and my salary is paid in Australian dollars. So me, I just keep the bare minimum of Aussie dollars for my expenses. And that's the that I spend the shit money and I save the good money. And this sort of, I'll stop there for a moment, but like, does that sort of give a picture of the different use cases for Bitcoin at a particular point in time?
Yeah, it does. And what I find interesting is that saturation point where it will become a currency that we can that we can exchange. Is are there predictions in that you know of, or is it just speculation at this stage?
Look, it's always going to be speculation, but we can use a simple experiment. So at the moment, you know, if Bitcoin, so Bitcoin's, you know, $85,000 today, whatever, in Aussie dollars. Now, if Bitcoin goes up $80,000, let's say next week, for example, so it hits 150, for example, that's an 80% rise in, you know, the value of the purchasing power of the money against Aussie dollars, for example. Now, that means you can buy twice the amount of eggs, or twice the amount of meat, or twice the amount of basically any other, you know, good that's priced currently in dollars. So, in the future, though, let's zoom out and say, okay, it's 10 years later. One Bitcoin, you know, is worth a relative value of, let's say, I think in a decade, probably a relative value of close to 10 million Australian dollars by the end of this decade. So at that point, if Bitcoin moves $80,000 in a day, the percentage movement is fuck all. It's like 0.008%. It's nothing. So what you've actually got is relative stability in the price when you price any other goods and services in the form of Bitcoin. So does that make sense what I'm saying there?
Yeah, simplify it again for me.
So as the price of Bitcoin increases, the percentage move decreases. So if Bitcoin moves $100,000 today, that's basically 100% movement. In the future, if Bitcoin is worth a million and it moves up $100,000, that's only 10% movement, right? If Bitcoin is $10 million and it moves $100,000, that's a 1% change in the relative purchasing power of Bitcoin. So what it means is as Bitcoin grows, the day-to-day movements, they basically dampen. They're not as wild. So that example that I gave earlier of my stereo system fucking being, you know, the price of a house now, technically, in the future, it might not be the price of a house. It might just, you know, over time, you know, slowly appreciate against the price of all other goods and services. Like the thing is, Bitcoin will appreciate forever, basically. It'll always continue to appreciate because money should actually appreciate over time if civilization and if society is growing in productivity, right? And that's maybe another topic I can dig into. But effectively, it becomes more and more of a medium of exchange as the maturity of Bitcoin, increases. Like they're correlated, those two things.
Gotcha. So your stereo system in 10 years' time, if you're buying it with Bitcoin, say in a decade's time, will be pretty relative to what it is in 11 years' time, give or take, without it having such high fluctuations if Bitcoin continues to go the way that it goes to saturation or maturation.
Exactly. Exactly. So that difference dampens. And like I said, it will not stop. Bitcoin will pump forever. Bitcoin will always move up, assuming the productivity of society continues to increase. So what happens with a good money, with a sound money, and something that can't be printed, is that the price of goods and services come down relative to the money. So you're actually, society is once again incentivized to save, which is, it's not incentivized to save today. We are incentivized into blind fucking consumerism today, because savings is pointless. Having cash is useless because it's worth less tomorrow. Whereas with Bitcoin, it actually changes the dynamics. And this is one of the things where I say, you know, Bitcoin is fundamentally the most important incentive shift on the planet if we want to save the environment, if we want to stop being consumers, if we want to be more sustainable, because it actually changes the underlying behavior of how people treat their money and how they use their money. If you know that next year, your savings are going to buy more, you're not going to just willy-nilly spend your shit. You're actually going to think twice before you just go and spend it on blind crap that you don't fucking need. And what that does is it creates more discernment. It creates more thinking. It creates what's called, you know, in economics, we call it a lower time preference, is that you start to value the future. You start to think long-term more than what the current fiat money model does, which is it incentivizes people to just fucking blindly spend all their money or blindly chase any fucking investment that they can find just so that they're out of cash. It's crazy. And that creates asset bubbles. It creates blind consumerism. It creates waste. You know, we've seen fucking plastics and cheap shit going around everywhere. It's like, it's crazy. So Bitcoin changes that underlying behavior of society. And I think that's one of the most profound impacts that it's going to have on the world.
It's been interesting over the last couple of weeks, again, since our last conversation. Again, I'll mention that I read, I have a thing on my phone that goes straight to Bitcoin news, and I check it once a day on the 24-hour cycle to see what's been said globally. And it's fascinating because I would say 95%, if not more, of the stories that came out over the last 2 weeks is Bitcoin is going to go down. It's reached its peak, blah, blah, blah. Then overnight, two days ago, it just went to a new all-time high. And then people, it's interesting because the media side of it, even on the cryptocurrency news sites, it has this narrative that if it doesn't continue to rise each and every day, then there's a negative connotation to that. it's like, oh, it's met its resistance at $59,000, and if it doesn't break that, then it's going to go down. It's like, well, what the fuck are you basing this on apart from your analytical programs where you have no idea what a million people or a billion people around the world are thinking? Like, the more I look at it, the more my perception is, and I've said this before, no one has a fucking clue. They're just filling up space with predictions, and they're not positive predictions.
Yeah. Well, if it bleeds, it leads, right? And all these idiots, they're trying to justify their fucking petty existence by creating fucking noise that the lemmings go around listening to, and then they make dumb decisions. Like, it was actually funny. My brother, the idiot, sends my sister a message, and he's like, oh, you know, because he started like after telling me I was stupid for many years for buying Bitcoin, he's like, "Oh, you're just a dumbass. It's gone to zero." And you know, he finally relented, I think, a few months ago and started buying. But he's not actually buying Bitcoin because he doesn't get it. So he's buying like a bloody a derivative, like a synthetic instrument over Bitcoin. And you know, he messages my sister and he's like, "Oh, bro, you better get out of Bitcoin because it's going to go down from here." And so she messages me and she's like, "Oh, what should I do? You know, my little brother's saying to do this." And I was like, "Man, that idiot has been telling you to sell your Bitcoin since $3,000. It's just shut up and keep buying. She's like, okay, no worries. So she bought some more. And then literally less than 36 hours before he said that, the price fucking cracked a new all-time high. And she's like, I'm glad I listened to you. It's like, I said, don't listen to any of these, you know, moron crystal ball fucking tea leaf idiots who think they can, you know, predict how human beings are going to behave with respect to something that we've never seen emerge in the history of humanity, a sound money that is digital, that, you know, the whole world is going to want to hold a piece of. Like, how you can't measure that. There is no computer model on the planet that exists that can tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. So fucking shut up and buy it. That's it.
And I was speaking to Nick about it this morning, actually. I said, you know, what's really interesting, even with that all-time high over the last 36 hours or whatever, I haven't seen one outlet in Australia, mainstream news, whether it be the Australian, the Sydney Morning Herald, the news.com, the Daily Telegraph, talk about it. It's like, oh, either they're not either aware of it or they're suppressing it or maybe they're, I don't know. I find it really, really interesting that something like this is, I don't know, it's a strange reality that's existing at the moment, and I love it.
Yeah, well, it's in none of their interest for Bitcoin to succeed, because it gives them no option but to be honest. You know, they don't get, like, the media loses all its handouts from the government. You know, the only, you know, they lose all credibility, because for 12, 13, 14 years now, they've been saying the opposite of what you should do, which is to accumulate Bitcoin. So, you know, many of them either look like fucking fools, or there is potentially an agenda there for them to want to suppress Bitcoin, because it's a threat to every single fiat currency. And anything that's a threat to the fiat currency is a threat to the teat that they suck off, you know, like the media isn't just magically aligned with the government for no reason. The media is aligned with the government and the central banking cartel, because, you know, whenever the public stop watching their stupid shit, where do you think they're going to get the money from? Oh, Mr. Government, give us a handout, you know, nationalize us or whatever the case is. And, you know, us poor bastards have to pay for that through our taxes and inflation. So it's just a rigged game, you know, and Bitcoin's a major threat to all of that. It's a threat to their entire fucking edifice.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I've had a lot of people talk about silver and gold and precious metals, and I've got a podcast with John Adams in a couple of weeks. We're meant to do one today, and he talks about silver, and a lot of people mention that, and I've been watching silver over the last and gold over the since you and I have had our first discussion. And it's done nothing, nothing in the last 4 months. And everybody's like, it's about to go, it's about to go. And like, it's sort of gone down a little bit since if
you price it in Bitcoin, it's gone down. Like the opportunity cost of having dismissed Bitcoin for silver or gold is moronic. Like, it's just stupid. Like, anyone who's still sitting there, like, the way I talk about it is, the gold bugs are actually correct in a lot of the things they say. They're like, look, fiat money is bullshit. Government issuing money is, you know, really bad. You know, inflation, blah, blah, blah. So they're actually right in diagnosing the problem. But the solution they give you is just preposterous in a world in which Bitcoin exists. And this is where they get it so fucking wrong. And what I kind of say, like, as a mental model is, you know, the gold bugs have been the people, like the gold and silver people have been sort of trying to build this life raft, because they know the world is fucked up, and they're like, yep, we need to build a life raft because we need to protect our wealth, as, you know, let's say, as like a Noah's Ark as the flood comes. And then, you know, Bitcoin has came along and we built a fucking rocket ship and we're off to Mars while these idiots are still sitting here building a life raft. So it's like, we've solved the problem. You know, we're out here and you guys are still fucking sitting here quibbling with your sticks and straws. Trying to build a life raft to protect yourself from the fiat system, which is imploding.
How do you, when people, you know, I read the comments on social media and people go, well, Bitcoin went up 5% today, but this other coin went up 300% or 200% or 100%, and it's gone up 3,000% since the start of the year, blah, blah, blah. Like, if you really want to make money, then you invest in this. And I answered somebody the other day, and I said, for me, my understanding and perspective of Bitcoin, as you've explained it to me, it's not so much about the, if you're doing it to make money, that's perhaps should.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.